started. Okay, let me
Got it.
All right. Okay, so today is Thursday, July 11th, and I'd like to bring the Environmental Services Advisory Committee meeting to order. Item one, roll call. Fred Ariza.
Here.
Margo Garcia.
Here, hooray.
Yay. Doug Jennings is absent. Trevor Ledbetter is absent. Susanna Schippers.
Here.
Ryan Thomas is absent. And Chris Yarder, I'm present. Okay. Let's start out with item two, director's report. Code enforcement update, yay.
Okay, so just want to give you a quick update on code enforcement. So as you may or may not be aware, Lori has essentially taken a separate role within code enforcement. So she's taken pretty much a lateral move into the VANS, the Vacant and Neglected Structures Program Coordinator. Okay, so she's still embedded within code. Her focus is going to be really on the VANS program. We also have assigned two inspectors really to help her out in that role in that program, and those are essentially seasoned inspectors, been here for the city for quite some time, Felix Morales and Beth Tidwell. And they're the ones that are going to be helping Lori out to really just to get really the VANS program going. It's not
Was
really
that Beth, did you say
Beth,
real quick?
Yes, yeah. Beth. And so it's not really like a flip with a switch saying all of a sudden you're no longer doing your typical code enforcement cases and you're going to VANS. There is going to be some transition period that will take place. So that's already on the works.
Oh, so no, she scrambles them all.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Margo.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
So to back up Lori's position, then again, yeah. We internally have assigned essentially on a temporary assignment, we have assigned Martin Lopez really to be the acting supervisor for code enforcement. So those are just kind of interim assignments for the time being. Martin is probably going to be on a 6-month rotation in that role, really allow for some of the other inspectors. If we don't have a position filled by that point in time, we'll essentially create that rotation for other folks that were interested in assuming that role. As it relates to the VANS programs, they're not a different classification of inspectors. They're still code inspectors. They're classified as code inspectors, but they're just going to be assigned to the program. Keeping in mind that program is no longer going to be complaint driven. It's going to be more of a proactive. It's going to be proactive code enforcement as it relates to the VANS cases.
Okay.
So that's what we need him focus on that, and we're really working out the criteria in terms of really what is really moving the cases that were traditionally embedded within a code enforcement inspector. Transition, then we meet the classification of the VANS cases. So therefore, can we transition those cases to those inspectors, to those VANS inspectors, and really allowing really for the VANS inspectors really to reallocate some of their caseload really to some of the remaining inspectors to continue with the workload. So
can you tell us how many code inspectors we have now? That are not VANS.
Okay, so I don't have the exact count. I believe we have so vacant positions were in terms of inspectors. We had one vacant position, so I think it's a total of 13. I may be off a position here and there. We had 13 inspectors. So right now we have two vacant positions, and those two vacant positions are one that we had carried vacant for a while, and then the other one was essentially a recent retirement. That we just had within the last 2 weeks. Okay, so those are the two vacant positions. But, and also in as part of in adding to those vacant positions, we were allocated two additional code enforcement positions to make up for the two Vance inspectors. Okay, so in reality, or in reality, we have on the books right now four vacant code enforcement positions. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, so we've just got nine right now.
I'm sorry?
So we just have nine right now.
No, we have, right. So if you look at
we have Ryan,
that, yes. Uh-huh.
And then right. And then you're hiring CSOs from.
So we were trying to hire CSOs, okay? And that's what we tried to do last time. So the difficulty we had with the CSOs is we share the same classification as TPD, and TPD has them basically going to the academy. There is a selection process that we don't essentially have them go through the academy. So Central HR had in police and the police department had some beef with us using that classification and having CSOs employees classified as CSOs, and some of them going through the academy and some of them didn't. So right. What we ended up doing is we ended up using a classification within the department, which is utility service account representative, and we reassigned those CSOs positions to that job classification. So as part of the efforts moving forward is we want to create an entry-level code enforcement position that doesn't require all the years of experience as your typical traditional code inspector. And that entry-level inspector will deal with property maintenance issues such as outdoor storage, weeds, junk motor vehicles, more straightforward cases. And really, as they transition through their career, they certainly get acclimated into the code, into the other parts of the code, and they can be part of that, part of the remaining cadre of code inspectors. But that's gonna really take some time to develop. We're working with that. But that process is not very fast, and it's going to take us a while to move that forward. So, what we're going to try to do is we are going to recruit for essentially those code enforcement inspector positions. We're going to go out, and we're in the process of publishing those positions as we speak. The other thing that came into fruition as of March 1st. There is the city entered into a new recruitment and selection process. And it's a totally different essentially process where most of the recruitment efforts are now our responsibility of the department. Okay. So when we need to post and part of what happened is they eliminated all the job descriptions that were currently on the books. And now for every position that we want to fill, we need to create the position description. So, okay. So that is a new process. So now for every position, and I mean every position, we need to come up with a new job description or description or position description. Okay.
So who even if I'm that make work.
I'm sorry?
Who thought up that make work? To rewrite all the job descriptions. That's ridiculous.
Okay. So totally, I know you have totally nothing agree, to totally do. Understand. So that was really part of the new onboarding system that the former HR director basically instituted, and that's currently in place right now. Okay, so one of the things that when all this stuff was essentially put to fruition, most of that work was done in a vacuum. Not a whole lot of feedback or interaction from the department. So now everybody's really is feeling the pain of the new process, and we're working through that. What adjustments do we need to make in order to facilitate the hiring process? So one of the things that we have encountered is as of March 1st, that's a new process. We have not onboarded a new employee, no employee has been onboarded since then. So we've been on that drying spell of hiring folks since then, okay? So to continue with what is a new recruitment and selection process, so now now the department has to develop the job description or the position description, has to be submitted to human resources. they either approve or make amendments to the job description. Okay. They kick it back. They approve the job description. Once it is approved, then we're allowed really to begin the recruitment process. But in order for us to start the recruitment process, we need to assemble what is called the recruitment team. That recruitment team, basically, it's at least is comprised of three individuals. Those three individuals now essentially meet with the hiring authority. Okay. In that case, so for instance, if we were to hire for Pat's position, I am the hiring authority. Okay. And I tell that selection panel or the recruitment panel, what am I looking for? What are the skills, abilities that I'm looking for that position? At that point in time, I'm excluded from essentially from the initial screening, from the initial selection of that person. That recruitment team then essentially reviews all the applications. They schedule what's called the interview, and essentially they rank the individuals in low, medium, and high. Okay, as a low candidate, medium candidate, high candidate. Then at that point in time, if hiring interviews need to be conducted, I'm essentially given the ability or the flexibility to interview those individuals. But now the review all the applications, the review of all the paperwork, really to essentially select who we're going to interview, that's all driven by that panel. Okay.
By the interview team.
By the interview team. Okay. The other component is that interview team has also needs to attend two types of training. One, which is called a bias training, okay, which essentially, and I can't remember what the other training is called. It's really the new recruitment process. So two separate trainings, and those panels, those two panel members need to have attended those two courses. So in the past, you helped us sit in some of the interview panels. So if you were going to be part of that panel, you have to attend those classes. Okay, you have to attend those seminars. So we had a few of those internal. We're trying to schedule more as we move forward. But that also has been a glitch that list of individuals, sometimes it was correct, sometimes it wasn't. So sometimes we said, here's my panel members. And for whatever reason, it didn't show that it had attended that training. We couldn't use them. So it really just created a lot of fiasco on that. Okay.
Oh,
so for example, okay. So for example, we had over 110 interviews or essentially applications for our equipment operators. So we had four folks sitting, going through those interviews. They all each spend basically 6 hours each on really sieving through those applications. And then they had to meet and then decide which ones they were going to move forward to a selection. So right off the bat, we tied up staff time, at least 24 hours of staff time, really to review basically a set of applications that before it was done by human resources. And yes, we essentially spent the time to review and move forward with whoever we wanted to interview. Okay. So those are all the things that are really creating more of a backlog on the department on assembling not only the recruitment team. And say, for instance, the other challenge that we have is, so say, for instance, we assemble a team of a recruitment team of key individuals. One person gets sick, it's on that individual goes on FML. The request is that I need to start a new recruitment process because that member is no longer there. And I said, we're not going to do that. I said, I'm going to break the rules. It's like, how am I going to cancel a recruitment for over 100 Jeez. Individuals? And so those are some of the things that we're having to work around the system, do a special approvals because we're not really following that process. So we have voiced all those concerns really to management and to human resources. So they're working through all this stuff really to be able to make some changes. The other example that I can...
Who is the person now?
So the new interim HR director is a person that was hired on temporarily while they go through the recruitment process. her first name is Terry, but I can't remember her last name.
She came from out of town, or?
Yeah, I think she's from out of town, yes. Huh?
Did she go through that same process?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold my fifth on that one.
Sympathy, empathy, and everything else, compassion. That's awful, Carlos. I'm so sorry. Yeah. What a mess.
So that's really, I'm giving you that as a background. That's an excuse, but really just as a factor, really what we're doing really to onboard folks. Okay. So the spirit of intent to really is not physical capacity, not ability to have bodies or the ability to hire. It's really just been bogged down by the process. So we're doing everything we can really to expedite internally those reviews and make sure that we schedule those interviews. But that's really that's going to be really the challenge on trying to get those folks on board. I wish we could be sooner rather than later, but that's essentially the situation that we're seeing, trying to onboard those inspectors. So
who's filling in for Pat? I mean, are you just like,
okay, so
yeah, you know, he did a lot,
right?
We know that.
So on that, and that's kind of like coupled in with the next update is the staffing update. Okay. So obviously the city manager's office is aware that of really what we're facing in terms of staffing, in terms of some of the vacancies. So what they have asked human resources is really to deploy additional bodies really to the department. So not to the department ourselves, but to our satellite office of human resources. So they deployed two staff members. And I think that occurred about 3 weeks ago. Okay. And so we have been meeting on a regular basis every week, really trying to move a lot of those approvals along. But it really boils down to me being the bottleneck on some of those high level recruitments, because now I have to assemble, come up with all those questions, do all this stuff. And I just haven't had the ability really to do that. So then I become to be the bottleneck, and there's nobody else that I can delegate that to, because I am basically considered the hiring authority. So trying to find workarounds that, but at least for Pat's position, that's what is really taking a little bit longer. So there's still some discussion about really transferring a deputy director from another department to here to fill that void, from not so much from the ES side of things, but really from the facilities, sustainability stuff, to be able to shore us up as we go through this recruitment. But essentially, and that's really a priority on their end, that they're looking for to see if that person will make its way this way or our way. In the interim, what I've done is I did a direct appointment. I directly appointed Jose Montijo to an administrative position in collections. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to be somewhere between a superintendent and what Pat's role was. And my whole goal is really for him to help me really with the collection side of things. And that includes your brush and bulky, your homeless camp cleanup, your recycling pickup, all the stuff that Pat was really primarily doing that, and really assigning that to Jose to help me out on that. That he recently assumed that role, I would say maybe a couple weeks ago. So he's purely, even though he's been in the department for quite some time, but obviously he's in a different role to really understand kind of what's going on. How does he transition from his role to the new role, and really getting him to a different level of work as compared to who he was at. So I'm fully confident of his abilities and his knowledge really to move that along. But it's obviously it's not like a flip of the switch of really moving that forward. So that's on the works as a short gap measure really to get us moving on really just trying to get some of those systems or some of those things up and running. We're going to continue to recruit really. So the other position that we want to kind of couple the two reports are coupled with code enforcement. The other position that we want to pursue is really filling the administrative role for code. So again, we're probably looking somebody internally to see if they can help us with that, if they meet the minimum qualifications and if there's interest, so that we can plug the hole. Obviously, it's going to create a hole somewhere else, But I think at least from the level of importance and the level of sensitivity of those cases, it gives us really more, plug that hole where more where it's needed. Still, the void would be somewhere else. But I think we can work through that on filling that behind that. So that's kind of where we at overall, is really trying to maximize really the movement internally, trying to fill some holes. While we know that one of the challenges is really the new recruitment process, how do we move along, get CMO really to get us on bypassing some of those approvals, so we can really begin to fill for some of those positions. So, but in all honesty, our HR manager said we need to be proactive. This new system is going to be kicking in on March 1st. Let's basically fill as many positions as we can on the old system. That's what we did. So all those folks are beginning to trickle in and help us with that. But if you look at it, the new recruitment process, we have not onboarded anyone yet under the new process. Continue to work through that and really find ways on how we can really work around on some of those established processes that are in place. That certainly is a change. And I think what also the other thing that happened is we not only instituted a new essentially recruitment process, we also transitioned from the old job application software to Workday. And so a lot of those processes don't jive with the new recruitment process. So there's a lot of back and forth things that need to be modified. Instead of really looking at, let me transition from the old job applications to the new Workday, let's get that settled. And once that's settled, then let's move forward with essentially the new recruitment process. So we changed both of them at the same time. And that's what's really creating a lot of the ruckus, because it's not so much an administrative change, it is also a systems change. And the system is not, I would say, programmed, or it's not programmed to fit what we instituted, and what we instituted doesn't really match up to the processes. So we're trying to develop a lot of workarounds to be able to get the approvals and reprogramming to move things along. So that's another thing that we're facing internally that is taking us a little bit of time.
Well, Carlos, it looks forward. Like they're trying to save money by not appointing, you know, but by not hiring people to be supervisors, because, you know, with Lori gone, she was a supervisor for code enforcement. Are you not going to appoint another supervisor for code enforcement?
We are. And that's, okay. So going back to that, to code, is it's really Lori moves into that role, two inspectors essentially move into that role. We're going to fill behind them, so that way we don't feel the negative loss of those three resources. So we got the authority to overfill or fill for those two inspector positions as well as lawyer's positions. Then we're going to essentially fill the other one, fill that position. And then we're also going to fill essentially the code enforcement administrator position. So we have a lot of gaps per se. But we have the authority, and I think what is bogging us down is the new system, the new process, but we have the authority, we have the money, we have all this stuff to be able to do that. So I'm hoping that within a couple months, we should be able to be trying to be in the pathway to be somewhere more staffed than where we're at today.
Okay, so there's a lot of ES personnel that's being piled on.
So. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well,
so I combined the two reports. The discussion kind of covered both of them.
Yeah,
so I don't know if there's any specific questions on that.
Are there any questions?
They overlapped. Uh-huh.
Fred, do you have?
Is there any kind of indication as to when things will kind of settle down and the process will be smoothed over and you'll be able to start having, you know, filling the jobs that you need to fill it so you can just get things done?
I'm really hoping within the next 60 days, we would be on a much smoother path. I don't think we're going to be in a position that we're going to be totally solvent. but at least on a good path of onboarding some of those positions and really be in a good position really to be recruiting and be filling those positions. So, but even if we extend an offer today, we probably don't see someone coming on board for another 30 to 45 days. And so that's why I'm saying 60 days when we begin to materialize and see bodies in here, but really the effect of somebody really being fully functional here, it's going to be another 6 months before we can really begin to really see them fully in action and fully engaged in the department. So if you ask me, is like, if we go back to normal, be able to say, you know, I think we're being stable. I'm probably talking about a 6 month period before I can say, if everything goes well and we fill the positions that we need to fill that are in the queue, that are a priority, I think it's really going to be about a 6 month period before we can be in a much better position than where we are today.
Was the previous method broken?
So I think there's, I don't think it was broken. I think there were several factors that necessitated the change. So one of them was the job application software system really to fill applications online and apply for the city. That system was no longer going to be supported. So that was one of those things that the city made the decision, let's go into this Workday Enterprise account. Let's basically ensure that now all applications go through Workday. And now we have essentially one enterprise system that manages all the city's finances and all the city's human resources and procurement into one single umbrella. And that's what Workday is doing. Okay. So that's what necessitated that. I think the other thing is when you have a new person, a new sheriff on board and came in and there's other initiatives that the city was embarking was, that they reviewed essentially how the city was doing the recruitment, the selection, and since other programs were adopted, is are we equitably recruiting? Are we ensuring that our recruitment process is not biased? And so we added those components, and so that's what we had to redo our process to incorporate a lot of those new programs that were not in place a few years behind. So it's different things. It's not so much they're broken, it's really new policies, new initiatives, new programs that needed to be put in place, coupled with the transition of the IT system, all those things coming in at once and really revising the old process.
Question. Can you just take the old job descriptions, put them in the new format and send them in?
I could, and we could do that, but now there's specific. They want to see a specific breakdown of the job description. So what they're after is saying, there's so many requirements I forgot them, but essentially they want their skills and abilities broken down by percentage. So if all of a sudden, if I'm driving a truck, they want to know how much time am I driving a truck? So they want to be able to have a percentage description of the task that I do. Is no longer just a general job description. It has to be broken down by task and the percentage of those tasks that I do. So yeah, I can do that, but then the percentage has to jive with what I'm putting together on that, and it has to be really more reflective of the actual work that we're doing or they're doing. Okay, so if we try that and some of those got kicked back or were sent back to us because we didn't meet those parameters of what they're looking for, the breakdown of the task and what they're looking for.
So the person though that is, it seems to me there's somewhat of a disconnect between having, I guess you have the supervisors writing those job descriptions because they observe what the worker is doing, but how do you know actually how much percentage of the time that the person driving the truck is actually driving the truck? I mean, and what does it mean to drive a truck? Does it mean when you bring it into the garage, you have to wait half an hour before you can get into a bay? Are you still driving the truck?
So Ms. Margaret, that is a disconnect, okay? So in one way they're saying we need to rely on the subject matter experts to, we can no longer rely on a general job description, okay? And we gotta make sure that the employees are adequately and properly classified. So therefore, you department, you hiring authority, the direct supervisor, tell us what the actual position does. And I want it broken down specifically in percentages, okay? And that is fine and dandy, okay? Then we submit that to Central HR. And this is where the disconnect is in saying, I'm relying on you and the SME to tell us what the position does. We send it back to them and they make all those changes. Well, you didn't need to include this, exclude that. So, well, why are you doing that if you're asking us for us to prepare the job description and yet you don't agree with the things that we listed, okay? So those, that is a struggle that we're having when we develop those job descriptions, saying, they're saying we're the SME, all of a sudden they become to be the SME and they're ultimately the ones that are controlling what goes or what stays in that job description, okay? So it's very frustrating to go back and forth on that one. And a lot of times, to be honest with you, just to get something in there, we just give up, so tell us what it is that you want and we'll just get it moving and get it posted, okay?
I can certainly understand that. So does it help to have the three people in your satellite office because they can walk outside and talk to a truck driver and see what they're actually doing, just to pick on the poor truck driver?
But again, they can't, okay? Because those three persons from HR, they no longer do that because they can't do that because they're not direct supervisor out of that for that person. They're no longer the hiring authority. HR is no longer the hiring authority. The hiring authority is that ES supervisor that is going to supervise that driver. Okay. So even they go out there and do that, that's what it doesn't make sense. Okay. It doesn't really make sense. Okay.
It doesn't.
So that's what the new system is HR is saying, I'm just going to be in the air traffic controller. You as a hiring authority, you tell us what you're looking for. Okay. What you're looking for. You tell the recruitment panel what you're looking for. They go find you. They bring it out to you and said, I think I'm good. I get it. Or I'm going to conduct hiring interviews and that way I can select that. But the HR person is no longer doing that. It is essentially that frontline supervisor that is, or the frontline supervisor that is dictating or saying what they need and no longer. So here's the other one, the other frustrating part. Okay. So we're recruiting for a building and maintenance worker, basically a trades labor. Okay.
Yeah.
And when we went about it, we went about asking for a carpentry because they want to be so specific. It's one general job description, which is the building maintenance worker. But so the first is they ask you, who is the hiring authority? With Steve Kogan out of the carpentry shop. Okay, tell me what you're looking for. We'll go out there and recruit and do all this stuff, okay? We have the same need for the same type of labor position in plumbing or electrical. So, yep. And when we do the hiring for the carpenter, building maintenance worker, I said, in the past, we used to use that hiring list and hire for the plumber, BMW, and for the electrical. Now they're telling me is I can no longer use that list, okay? Because that recruitment was specifically posted for a carpentry, building and maintenance worker, okay? And so I have to restart the process again, okay, and creating a different job description for a BMW, again, a basic laborer, okay, in a plumbing position, okay? So I'm struggling with that. It doesn't make sense whatsoever. It's a labor position. Whether you assign it to that, he's doing the same thing. Yeah, he may not be dealing with wood, he may be dealing with pipe, but he's the same person. Okay. So and I can tell how extreme it could be. Okay. So an environmental service worker that could be assigned to a homeless camp cleanup, I need to develop a job description and I need to develop a different one for an environmental service worker who's picking up litter at the landfill. Okay. So
I'm sorry, it makes me laugh. How do I describe the person who's cleaning up a homeless camp? Well, let's see. They got to be able to shovel, carry away garbage. I mean, honestly,
right.
So who I mean, is mayor and council in on this? Is this what they want?
I don't think they got involved to that level. And I think, quite frankly, I think maybe the city manager's office is barely becoming aware of all the things that have been instituted. And so they're reviewing that, considering that. I'm not sure how much of that are we going to be able to pull back and go back to the old ways, or are we just going to have to live with it and move on? So I really don't know.
Hey, Carlos, I have a question. Out of, would you be able to do your job under these if you were going to be hired? Would you be qualified to do this, what you're doing now, based on this new thing?
I should be okay. I should be, but you never know.
Well, coming into a job like that, you know, every employee builds on their skills as they come in, and you can add more and more to their responsibility. But this is just I don't know how you're going to ever find anybody to fill these positions. So
yeah, you think that somebody would be able just to adapt with whatever it is you need to do, and that goes with any job. You go to any job,
yeah,
you're gonna find something that you didn't know you were gonna have to do, but you just do it.
Mm-hmm. You just do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It sounds a little bit like some DEI got into kind of mess as a way to, I don't know, break something up or break something open. Are you doing any kind of training with your supervisors that are having to fill in these god-awful descriptions?
So we have, and I think it's really, it's been more on a one-to-one basis.
Okay.
Really just to really move along the positions we're moving forward with. We just been bogged down, but just not only the system, but just all the other work that is basically around us.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to set more of a general training for everybody, so that way everybody understands. And the other reason why we haven't done that is because the process has changed so many times that that it's really hard to give them the real information. Okay. So that's why we're waiting really for the dust to settle, or if it's not going to settle, then maybe we could be to the point to say, hey guys, this is what we need to do, but we're not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I just imagine sitting in that supervisor position and being asked to figure out these percentages, you know, how much time do they need to go to the bathroom? It just, you know, kind of is crazy. So I would need help, and I think probably everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I'm sorry. One thing I do want to say, though, going back to code enforcement, we have so many cases that are still open from last year.
Mm-hmm.
That have, I mean, you know what? I don't report stuff to code anymore. I gave up, and I don't know if that's what the city wants. Or what, but for people that don't live in HOAs, it's our only way of having some quality of life. So I, you know.
So my suggestion is don't stop reporting. If you can, if you got the time, please continue to do that. Cause that, yeah. if that goes away, then they think that there is no longer needed. Okay. So, and so that's one thing. And the other thing is I told you guys before is, I haven't really taken the position to say, you know, because due to our staffing levels, we're not going to attend to any weed complaints. We're not going to attend to any outdoor storage. We're not going to attend to motor vehicles because they're not life and safety situations. I don't want to do that because then it really just adds more fuel to the fire. And people say, well, the city's not going to do that, at least in this way. And maybe I'm taking an incorrect approach is, the cases continue to build. That basically tells that we have more work than we have staff. We got to inch on this. We can't get behind, and we're just going to continue to work through this. And this is something that the numbers are speaking for themselves in terms of the backlog, and the need really for us to recruit and continue doing all the things that we need to be doing. So, because I can say weeds. So we're not going to do weeds. That's at least 3,000 cases a year. Okay, that we don't deal. Outdoor storage, that's an additional 1,200 to 1,500. Junk motor vehicles, you're talking about 500 a year. So right off the bat.
That's still TPD though. TPD is
no,
still...
We're doing that.
You're back doing JMBs.
We're back doing it, uh-huh. Okay. JMBs, uh-huh. Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, fun. Okay. We probably should move on. But thank you. If you need some people to pick at their offices, Margo and I are really good at that. I'm sure yep. Fred
will be able to join us.
We'll all join in, right?
Okay.
I can see the sign now. Let release from
Susanna, Boston. You're in on that too, right?
Let them hire people.
Okay. Well, thanks. Oh, and it's been raining and pouring at my house. So.
Oh, not yeah. It looks pretty dark on that side, so that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been going on for about 15 minutes. So that's good.
Good. Good.
Okay. Well, we've got the sustainability campus update. Frank, you ready?
Yes. Let me share my screen. I put together a little PowerPoint. I wasn't sure who all was going to be joining. But it seems like mostly it's the same faces, which is okay.
Sorry about that, Frank. We're trying to get you some new ones, but we're not very successful.
You're probably multitasking too, right?
A little bit. Can you see the screen now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so I'll just give you, I'm going to try not to go into a lot of fine detail and talk a little more about the Los Reales Sustainability Campus. First, you all know it's what used to be the Los Reales landfill, but we're doing a lot more than just being a landfill out here. It's been in operation since 1967, and you can just see some of the data on the left-hand side there, but we currently have around 247 acres of current waste footprint. Here's just a general picture, an overhead picture of what it looks like. And you can see the unlined area, and then on the right hand side, we've got cells 1, 2, and 3 on the far east of the property, and then cells 4A and 4B, which we're currently working in. So just in general, we have 3 scales. We have an inbound and outbound. We have an auto scale too. And we're basically a regional landfill. We're taking in around 243,000 tons that happened in 2023. Here's a picture of one of our compactors. So all the waste comes up to the working phase, what we call the working phase, which is the landfill itself. And the material is pushed and compacted. And here's a lot of the nice equipment that we have out here, dozers, our compactors, our water truck.
Are you using any of your new electric vehicles?
We don't. None of the heavy equipment is electric.
Okay.
It's all run on diesel.
Okay.
For diesel. And then, of course, we are heavily regulated to operate this landfill, and we have permits with EPA. We have Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. We have our stats where we have our solid waste facility plan. We also have with Pima County DEQ, we have our Title V major source air quality permit. And I didn't mention this, but we also have some permits through ADWR because we have, of course, extraction wells for our groundwater contamination on site. I'm not going to talk a lot about that. Our facility plan is basically our operating plan. This is what guides us in operating the landfill and ensuring that we are properly operating it for long terms. At this point, we line our landfills, and we do have an unlined area, which is why we have a contamination on site. But the facility plan specifies what we can and cannot accept. It specifies our total capacity at this point, and we can always amend it or revise some of that if needed. But it also calls for, it gives us the controls when we end up closing the landfill and then post-closure monitoring. And we also currently do groundwater monitoring and, of course, perimeter landfill gas monitoring, which are required not only under the air quality permit, but the solid waste facility plan. A little bit about our South 4 landfill liner system that we installed recently in 2023, which included mass excavation of the cell, which is around, roughly around 100 feet from the surface, below surface. And it a footprint of about 20.6 acres. That's what or our surface area for cell 4B. And then the construction also included the leachate system for both 4A and 4B completion of it, and also a groundwater storage pond and the tank. The tank was not necessarily built as part of this contract, but it was moved from the previous location, which was where the old treated water pond was sitting. I just put some pictures in there just so that you can kind of get an idea of what that is. And we did open the cell in August of 2023. We're currently not operating in it. We had to go back up to the unlined area, and partly because we're in the process of installing some horizontal collection extractors for landfill gas. And so those need to be trenched into the bottom of the layers that we have currently filled in. So we have two lifts. We have our initial 10-foot lift and a 15-foot lift right on top of that one. So we're going to be working through that. And then part of also why we had to move up a few months back was because we actually had a tear in the bottom of the liner. So we have to go in and repair that. And just to give you an overview of what the liner system looks entails, and you can see a picture here on the right of what it currently looks like. And this is a picture from the north edge towards the south. But we use 60 mil liner, and then there's also a geosynthetic clay liner that goes on the bottom. And so that what that does is that protects in case there's any future tears in the landfill in the liner at the bottom, then its job is so that it expands and it seals any of those perforations. Once we're filling and we go up, it's going to be impossible to ever reach. Try to dig in and try to repair any of that liner. So that is what the purpose of the geosynthetic clay liner access. Then there's also a layer of drainage rock, and then there's another fabric on top of that, and then there's another a foot of operation soil layer. And then in the past, I've mentioned that when the liner and all these layers are complete, we start with a 10-foot soft trash layer. And which we included, which we did, that's our first lift was a 10-foot layer. And all that is municipal waste, mostly from curbside, so that we don't have any construction or large materials that are going to poke through and then possibly damage the liner, which the whole project was close to like $7.8 million to complete. So the leachate collection system, which is in all of our line cells, we have line one, cell one, two, and cell three, cell 4A, and then 4B. The part of the construction that happened with the liner also was to complete the leachate collection system for cells 4A and 4B. And all the leachate that trickles down through the trash over time, it's collected at the bottom in it's basically a sump. And when that liquid is pumped up to the surface and stored in, what you see here on the right is in this case, we have a frac tank. And that one was part of the construction project. Then the leachate is recirculated on the top in our line cells. And we also sample and report our leachate annually to the regulatory authorities. And then also part of the landfill is that we have a landfill gas and collection system. And for that, we have a plan, a GCCS plan, which is regulatory compliance. We have a network of vertical extraction wells. And I mentioned a little while ago that we're going to start using horizontal collectors in cell 4B. We haven't used those in the past, but this is it's an effort so that we can start extracting landfill gas sooner. Usually it takes us up to like 5-year mark and then we start doing vertical wells. In cell 4B, we're going to start with some horizontal extractors. So I think we're roughly going to be almost into the 1-year mark when we'll be able to operate those and start extracting landfill gas in that area. The whole system, and then of course, also has lateral pipes and then a header that conveys all of that landfill gas over to the blower and flare station. We're currently operating the flare station, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about what we're going to do with the landfill gas. We have to do monthly wellhead monitoring. We also do quarterly surface emission monitoring. It's a serpentine pattern throughout the entire surface of the landfill. And then we also monitor, at this point, we're also having to monitor all the penetrations. So all the wells at the base of each well, and we have any exceedances. And an exceedance would be anywhere where we read 500 parts per million or greater. Then we have to mitigate those so that we have to lower it below the 500 parts per million, PPMs. Just general pictures, not necessarily our flare or our wells. But give you an idea of what we do have a candlestick flare, like similar to this one. And then on the right is one of the extraction wells, and then connected to a lateral that where we have the vacuum set on our system. So it's always run under negative pressure. Okay, I think I have two slides of the same one, but anyways. So what's the future for our landfill gas? What we proposed is for landfill gas utilization is to refine the landfill gas up to pipeline quality, and which would generate renewable natural gas. And then that gas would be injected into a regional pipeline, and then it would be offered for sale in the transportation market. So by doing this, we would be generating revenue for the city and for the RNG, and then we would also be generating revenue for the RINs, which are called renewable index numbers, which are the environmental attributes for the landfill gas. So those RINs are normally bought by larger companies that have to, like refineries, that need to be able to buy these to comply with their emission standards. This RFP was put out in 2023, and we're currently in the procurement process We can't talk a whole lot about it because it's still open, and we're still in the selection process. But a firm has been selected, and they're in the contract negotiation stage. So if everything goes well, then that contract will be signed, and we're projecting around 36 months to construction, and then starting to generate that renewable natural gas. Also, as part of the entire campus, LRSC, Los Angeles Sustainability Campus, we have the HSW facility. And we've had the HSW facility for quite some time. Actually, since 2016, it was built with the expansion, the scale house expansion and the administration building, but we also have the facility out at Sweetwater Drive. And so the program is primarily for residents. We also do commercial or small businesses up to a certain quantity, and because that keeps us in compliance as well. The expansion that we're going through right now, we're actually not in our HSW facility here at the site, because of course we're going through construction, and it's since 2023, and we're almost there. We're almost to the finish line. But it included expanding some of our canopies, and then the storage containers, which you see over here on the right, and those are necessary so that we can store all the extremely hazardous materials before we're able to ship them offsite. And we also have our hood here, our extraction hood, and that's where most of the consolidation of materials happen, of the chemicals. And the hood is to protect the employees from the vapors. And then part of the project was also to include fire protection equipment, because we will be handling flammable materials, and then we had to include that as well. Sprinkler system. And the whole expansion of the HSW facility, of course, is so that we can consolidate Sweetwater here at the campus, and then close down the facility on Sweetwater. Currently, we're having to transfer materials back and forth over to Sweetwater Drive so that we can do all the consolidation and then shipping from there. So in the near future, we're gonna have all the operations consolidated here at the campus and not have to deal with a lot of the transportation and a lot of that inconvenience that happens at this point. We also have the recycling, which we do glass. We do glass recycling. We do the traditional, the blue recycling, cardboard. A lot of what we do here, mostly, we're considered like a neighborhood recycling center, an NRC, but we collect a lot more than just your normal NRCs that are located throughout the city. We also have, I don't have pictures here, but we have a bay for our tires and our appliances for the refrigerators, because all of those have to be, the refrigerators or anything that has refrigerant has to be extracted before we send the metal for recycling. But we will also have a bifusion plastic container as soon as we can get one. Composts. A compost facility. Of course, it was inaugurated in April of 2021. It's a windrow operation, and our food stocks are food waste, the zoo do or the zoo manure, and green waste. And all of our stock, our feedstock, comes from diversion that we do throughout the city, and here at the campus, at the landfill site, we have the food cycle, the commercial food cycle program. And then we also have currently the food cycle at home residential collection program, which started a few months back. And we started doing a lot of green waste diversion also here at the landfill site. But we also bring in a green waste from Department of Transportation and Mobility, from their operations and their maintenance of the roadways and the streets. And then Parks and Rec, we're working with Parks and Rec right now to start bringing a lot of the green waste that they're generating, and that's going to be diverted green waste, which is going to be chipped and then also used in our compost facility. We're going through a planned area development revision right now. It's going to include zoning changes. We're going to have some commercial paths to entice companies or entities that can come in and make, and help us recycle and divert some of the materials that come into the landfill, of course, so that we can reach that zero waste goal that had been set for the city by mayor and council. There's going to be an area for parks and recreation. We're going to have a new recycling facility, hopefully, maybe even in the future, we might have a MRF, recycling, a MRF. And then we also have a multi-use or a walking path that's going to be all around the entire perimeter of the landfill. I'm going to talk about phase one in a minute here. We're partnering with Tucson Clean and Beautiful, and we have the tree growing center. But, and that might expand, may expand also in the future into a larger area. The landfill gas to energy project, we're hoping that, that we can get that one up and going soon. And we also applied for a grant to see if we can try to have more of a state-of-the-art compost facility, which would be a covered system with tarps, and it's an aerated system so that we don't have to have a larger space as we do now with the windrow operation.
Cool.
Here's just a little visual of what the pad revision is going to address. We'll have a waste reclamation area where all the waste and all the materials are gonna be handled. And then we're also gonna have a community resource activity area, which is mostly up close to the administration building, and hopefully an education facility. You can also see that we're getting around the perimeter, as I mentioned, where we have that open space, some recreation areas. And then the blue ones are also some commerce activity areas that are being planned. So currently for phase one, which includes the parks and recreation ballpark fields, mostly soccer and the amenities that are gonna go with that. If you look over here, on the far, on the upper right corner, which would be kind of northeast of the facility, is where, let me see if you can see my. In this area, oops. In that general area is where we're gonna have the ballparks. And then the walking path, which phase one will include it from Swan Road to Los Reales, and then from Los Reales to Garden Stone Road all the way to the new developments. And then phase one also includes the Los Reales and Craig Ruff intersection improvements. So here's just a general picture of what the ballparks is gonna look like. So they may not necessarily look exactly like this. There's definitely, at this point, Parks and Rec, they don't need any baseball fields. Mostly is gonna be soccer fields, and there might be some other, there might be some pickleball courts that might be built into that. But this is what we're envisioning the walking path will look like, a multi-use walking path. And there is gonna be a lot of harvesting for rainwater harvesting, a lot of trees planted, hopefully. Definitely, we're going to be planting more trees. And So quickly, as a tree center, which is a partnership that we have with Tucson Clean and Beautiful, they call the Tree Resource Education and Ecology Center, which is roughly around 150 by 150 fenced-in area that we prepared for them. It's also has an automatic drip irrigation installed, and that one was inaugurated in April of 2023. And Tucson Clean and Beautiful is actively growing trees here, And most of those are going to be for the 1 million tree initiative. We're also working with the Department of Transportation, DTM, for an initiative to recycle the Tucson street millings or the asphalt from the repair of this of the streets throughout the city. And currently all the millings have been stored for several years here at the facility. So they still, and we use some of those for our operation, but the pilot, a pilot was implemented a few months, about 6 months here. And they screened all the material and they're using it back on the streets within the city of Tucson. But there is also an expansion of this. There's a current proposal to expand that operation. And that one will be located in about a 10-acre footprint on the southwest of the property of the campus. And so it's not Tucson Clean and Beautiful. That should not have been there. I missed it. So disregard that last bullet. Well, that's all I have.
Thanks. That was in depth. Thank you.
Okay.
Any questions?
Are these improvements, are they funded or are you still looking for funding for them?
Frank, did you hear that?
Are the current improvements funded? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have applied for grants for the intersection improvements that we're putting together a grant to see if we can get that one funded. So the walking path is not funded yet. And to Parks and Recreation, they do have funding for, I believe, up to 4 ball fields right now, 4 soccer fields. And all of those were part of the developments in the area. And so that's kind of where we're at with funding on these 3 projects.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, I had a little bit of distraction here in the background. I missed a little bit about the gas reuse. Where is that right now? Do we have an actual proposal on how to use the gas, or is it still?
So let me just give you an update again on it. That's okay. And so you know, and I've talked about it before, Mario. The proposal is to refine the landfill gas and to pipeline quality, and then inject it into one of the pipelines, either Southwest Gas Pipeline or Kinder Morgan. And so we did start the RFP in 2023. We're currently in the process. We have selected a firm. We're in the contract negotiation stage, and so it's not concluded. So we don't necessarily can give up a lot of information. But if all of that goes through, then we'll have a contract, and then we project that within 36 months, we'll have a facility completed.
So in 36 months, it will be constructed and operational.
36 months from once we get a contract signed.
Okay. And how long to get the contract signed?
That could be a short time. It could be anywhere between about a month or 2 months at the latest.
Okay.
Unless everything falls apart with the firm we selected, then we'll have to go to the next one.
Yeah. But there definitely is movement on this project, and things are happening. It's not just sitting there.
Correct. There's definitely movement.
All right. Well, hooray.
We're almost through the finish line as far as trying to get a contract signed.
Yeah. And in the meantime, we just continue to flare the gas.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And does that impact at all the air quality permit from the county?
The flaring or the project?
Flaring.
No. Our permit allows us to flare, and so we're within our permit conditions.
Frank, I have a question. First, a comment. The household hazardous waste program you guys have there, those guys are just amazing. And they're so easy to work with. I've over the last couple of months, they've been nothing but great as far as telling me what I can can't bring them. And kudos to those guys. I don't know if they have sufficient shade to work in this summer, but my hat's off to those guys. Now, a comment or a question: where are the prevailing winds from surrounding the park, the
Right.
facility?
So our prevailing winds are to the northwest. Of course, they might change at any point
Oh,
throughout
yeah.
throughout the year, but primarily it's towards the northwest.
Okay, so it would be away from the ball fields.
Yes, mostly it's away from the buffet.
Yeah, I'm just because I'm channeling Sports Park back over on I-10 and I-10 when you'd have the aroma of
Retreat.
the sewer line, or you're trying to play a softball game and it just about killed everybody. The path itself, what?
Lentil doesn't smell.
Oh, that well, okay. That's still. I mean, you're going to have a hard time convincing people that it doesn't until you actually get people over there. But the walking path, would you be able to use the millings to help reinforce the walking path?
They could, maybe we could do that temporarily. But the design is because they want to use where they have asphalt, there's going to be an asphalt path as part of it because it's going to be mostly a bike lane. So the millings, the loose millings wouldn't work there. So I'd say if anything, we could use them temporarily, but I don't believe it's good. It would be a good idea for long term.
What is the length of the path?
Don't use that to eat on. Gotta get it.
Well, it's from, like I said, from starting at Swan all the way to Craycroft, and then from Craycroft, I want to say about a mile and a half, or maybe about a mile length. I don't, I, it's a good question. I haven't actually looked
Need
into exactly the
to
length.
know. It's going to be the people who live just east of the facility. They'll be able to get access to it from the housing that's going up there now.
Yes, because it's going to start right at the new development
Okay.
that's happening right there at I-10 at the end of Garden Stone.
Okay. So that would be a good place to put those new benches that we're making out of the plastic bottles and everything like that.
Bifusion.
Yeah, we could use those along the pathway. Because has anybody given any thought to put in a labyrinth along the path?
Nice
You think
thought.
that has come up?
The reason I bring it up is because we have a labyrinth at our park that we put in ourselves. The people from the neighborhood, we actually got permission from the parks department, and we actually built a labyrinth for people to use. And I forget how many years it's been in there, but it's used quite often. You know,
Cool.
it's a
Which park
nice
is it?
thing to have along a pathway so that. You know, if you don't feel like walking the whole path, or at least you can walk in a labyrinth. And you know, for some people, that's a very spiritual thing. The labyrinth we have people, we had kids and adults. We built our labyrinth just using river rock, and so they painted the rocks and they put their own designs and they put down remembrances for people who have passed, and just other things that just for them to this was way before the pandemic, but you know they were able to people have been using it since then, and you know they put in a lot of things that happened to them, and it's a good way for them to feel like they're connected with the area.
Nice, very nice.
Oh, nice. That's a good
So
idea.
it could be like an art project.
Yeah, it is an art project, really.
Art feature.
It's not just the building of the existence of the labyrinth, but You can get kids to paint, and it's anything that's free. Parents just love to have kids go out there participate in something like that, and then they, it gives them some sort of buy-in to the place, and it's something that they know that they help create, and so it allows them to feel like they're more connected with the with. I think it would feel more connected with the new path and with the labyrinth itself.
Cool.
Would lead to probably less vandalism because they feel that connection.
Right.
I would have thought so too, but we had ours vandalized.
Probably by outsiders.
Probably.
But it's a great idea. It would
Yeah.
be very nice.
Hey, I hate to move us on. Thanks, Frank. Really appreciate all
Yeah, thank
that
you, Frank.
information. But Maggie's been, whoops, my parrot's getting tired. Maggie's on, okay?
Hi everyone, can you hear me okay? Can you hear me? Yes?
Yeah.
Great.
Yes, yes.
It's a little noisy here. A big storm is starting, so apologies
yep.
if you hear some background noise, but it's a good reason, hopefully. So let me share my screen. Okay. So let's start with the financial overview by program. I pulled this data as of July 1st, and our fiscal year started on July 1st. So for our next meeting, we'll be able to look at the very beginning of the fiscal year 25 activity. But for now, we're still looking at fiscal year 24. So I just kept the same projection that I had done for period three. Now we have actuals as of July 1st, and we are at $57 million for all of Fund 502 in expenditures. But keep in mind that we will be processing transactions to this. Our accounting system is still open for the prior fiscal year, and we'll be processing transactions through the end of July, and we're still getting quite a lot of transactions or invoices submitted to us from Carlos's staff to process. So we have quite a bit going on in terms of getting some invoices in. Best projections higher, and I do think we could process, we could get up to this level, probably not necessarily, maybe over. We'll see how I did in quarter three with my projection. But you can see, our whole budget for the year was the 67.4 million. And I think we will come well under that. And that's namely because of the savings we had with the capital improvement projects. We have a lot of projects that are ongoing into next year, but we didn't expend as much as we had planned for in those areas. One thing I wanted to point out to you was in the plastic waste diversion and reuse. This place, we had put the first two payments to Bifusion as part of the contract that the city has with Bifusion, the agreement that was approved by Mayor and Council. And we're also posting here the costs to pay for the baling and some of for the plastic. And we were able to move some of the two first payments of the Bifusion to some grant funds, which was great. I don't know going forward if those will still be available, just based on timing, and grant funds have time constraints to them. But I just wanted to let you know about that. And then the other thing I wanted to say was that for next fiscal year, we have our adopted budget is $71.8 million. And the biggest increase there is going to be for vehicles that we planned on receiving, and also for capital improvements, and then also payroll related costs. Those are the big places that we would see increases to our expenditures. If you don't have any questions on this report, I'll skip to the next report.
That's fine.
Okay, thank you, Kay. And so for the next report, I wanted to show you our actual revenues so far as of when I pulled the report in July. And this, again, is unlikely to change very much just because we, most of our revenues post through what's called the Navaline system that we share with water. So all of those have generally, most the bulk of it has posted to the financial systems. We could have a few things coming in, like we get rebates for compressed natural gas, things like that, that we use or buy and use. And so we can see some some things post there after the fact. But by and large, these numbers are going to stay the same. So you can see that the effects of last year, $33 million for residential, and as of July 1st, we are over $40 million for residential revenues. So that's reflective of the rate changes that we were, we put the second half of the rate changes into effect in January. So we're starting to see the benefits of that. So that's nice. The other thing I wanted to point out to you, looking at our expenditures in capital outlay specifically last year, and that's where the large capital equipment that we purchased, the movable equipment, not the the CIP projects, but the building projects, but the refuse vehicles, large vehicles and equipment for the landfill, that kind of thing. Last year, we received $3.6 million in those items. As of July 1st, we had received over $7 million. And so really close to double in vehicles. And there we may see a little bit of an uptick there, even just in getting transactions posted for items that we would have received in the last few days of the fiscal year. So that was great that we were able to get a lot of vehicles in that had been on order and take a long time to receive because of supply chain issues. And just also it takes a long time generally from us, the time that we order the refuse vehicles to receiving them. So I wanted to point that out to you. And then the other thing I wanted to point out to you is that we have for our projection, maybe around $70 million in revenues and $62.9 million in expenses. So we would end the year in the green.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so we'll build up the fund balance. Go ahead.
Are there any quick questions for Maggie? I know we're running late. No?
No? Okay.
My question would be, how's the new work day? Have you been able finally to settle the discrepancies in the jobs and some of the other problems where people were being paid in the wrong categories and so forth? Is that all pretty much settled?
Yeah, we had to move people around quite a bit when workday went live, but I think we have everybody in the right place now. And so that helps us look at the expenditures by area and feel mm-hmm. confident about them. That's right. This time last year, when I first got here, I had to do a lot of cleanup and a lot of moving of transactions. and we've gotten that very stabilized now. So we can reliably say that when we're looking at the expenditures in residential, those are the residential expenditures, including the people. So that is nice that cleanup is behind me.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, I think we'll let you go. And I'll just hurry through the end of the meeting for everybody. Okay. Thank you. For item five, the waste diversion collections and education didn't meet. Let's move on to item. Oh, we'll move on to item six for future agenda items. I'd like to see if we could get a hefty update for ESAC. We'll probably hear something from Christina in the subcommittee meeting, but I think everybody would be interested to hear how it's going after all the complainers are done. So, anyone else have a future agenda? No? Margo?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear you with Christina, but I assume you're talking about the plastic stuff.
Yeah, I wanted to get an update for all of ESAC on the hefty program, but I didn't know if you wanted something. Or Susanna, is there something you want to talk about?
Because it's not the hefty, but what's happening to the to Bifusion and to those other plastics, and you know, are they just landfilling them, or are they bailing them, or
right? Just an update.
They're not taking them at all, so they're landfilling them.
Get a
for the bags. Is that working? I mean, I'm not physically in Tucson, so I haven't been past since the 1st of July. What's happening?
Yeah, that's the, what we'll get an update, because that started July 1st. So maybe they'll have some information for us next month. Susanna, do you have anything you'd like to talk about?
Not anything new, but I remember we had a gentleman attend the call to the audience the month before last, and I think we had suggested he might come back for another discussion, but I'm not sure if that worked out in terms of scheduling. He was a zero waste plan.
Yeah. Well, we're familiar with Sustainable Tucson, and we have connected with Mr. Green several times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. No call to the audience, and thankfully we made it. Yes.
Would be Plan Tucson, what's happening with them with regards to. Did you give a report or anything?
For Plan Tucson?
Yeah.
No, we really just don't have time for everything right now, but we'll have more of an update now, especially since PDSD is, we're having meetings with them now. So,
okay.
Yeah, we'll get more information on that.
I have something, Chris.
Yes.
It seems to me like the messaging for ESAC is not getting across to everybody, because I'm hearing things like, well, why is there so much plastic and all the stuff being collected at the dump when they're probably just going to throw it away? And there's question about the hefty bags and all this stuff. Is there a way for us to have the messaging straightened out for this whole thing? Because it seems to me like there's a disconnect between what the city's doing and what the people's perception of what they're doing.
Yeah, Fred, it's online.
Christina, I know that. But
yeah, okay.
So Christina, you know, people don't seem to.
We had a meeting at Ward 6, and so it was heavily attended, and I know Carlos and Christina have been real busy trying to answer everybody's questions. And so we'll probably hear more about how things are going after it's been in place for a month, okay? But it's been in the paper. It's on the City of Tucson site for environmental services, where Christina answers everybody's question. I know Carlos has been getting lots of questions and stuff. So if we can point people to that, that would be
no. What kind of knives?
That would be
knives. No.
Yeah. So
Chris,
I didn't know if you were aware that it was on the environmental services site. Answers.
Yes. Yes. And so I just direct people to that site.
Yeah.
If they have any questions.
And I think you had a million questions, Carlos, from that meeting. And
yes, we did. And I think Christina put a lot of the information through the Ward 6 office. We'll respond to those. Fred, for your information, there is a hard to recycle webinar that will be hosted, that we're going to schedule it for July 23rd at 5 o'clock. So that's really intended, really trying to answer more questions and more of an update to as well. So we'll make sure that we send you the link, but that's coming up, a virtual webinar related to this program.
What day is that?
It's July 23rd at 5 o'clock.
Okay, that was in the, all right.
Okay.
Okay. Let's, I think we need to move to adjournment because we've gone way, way over. It's 5:44. And the meeting's adjourned, and we'll just have lots more questions for you next time, Carlos. Thank you.
Okay. Sounds good.
Enjoy the rain. I hope you're getting
wet. We're getting it pretty good over here. And my wife just called me and said that our neighbor's tree just fell over her car. So it was a very intense rain on the west side.
Yeah, so, this has really been.